Good evening and welcome along to Midweek Motorsports. I'm John Hindorf, and once again in the next 2 hours we'll be taking a look at things going on in the motorsport world this week. It's a special show, which is our stock car season preview, featuring mostly NASCAR Nextel Cup and the NASCAR Busch Series. We won't be forgetting our normal features either, with the motorsport news coming up, but it would be remiss of me if we didn't start the show this week by thanking everyone who sent in the emails last week. I don't think we've had a fuller box. And yes, stop it right there. So thank you very much, especially to Paul Collins and Brett Harrington, along with Lauren Bellinger, who in fact we mentioned her last week, who let us know exactly where Shannonville and Calabogie Raceway was, which we were talking about last week. And also to Simon Speakart, who emailed us about the Saab touring car story, which he had a great laugh about, but points out that the car in fact does have SemiWorks backing, and gave us a link to that on the web as well. Tim Gray in with me as ever this evening. Tim down there in the studio in London. But by far, Tim, the most of our correspondence, probably as expected, was in response to the
wheel or no wheel.
Sadly not wheel or no wheel. Although there were a couple of emails to say nice to have the old friend back, Dr. Wolfgang Ulrich, headman at Audi Motorsport, and his comments about the Audi team's threat to leave the American Le Mans series. Now, we had so many emails that it's pointless me trying to read through any of them and mention people by name, but interestingly enough, all of the chat board forums in the sports car community went absolutely wild on Wednesday evening, and you and I were both watching them. It was quite an interesting week, wasn't it? Because it started off with many people, particularly in America and the American Le Mans series, being fairly dismissive about Audi's threats.
Yes.
They really didn't care whether Audi stayed or not. I've been watching as it's developed over the last 7 days or thereabouts, and more people have come in on Audi's side and said, well, the rules are rules, and they've put a lot into the series, etc. But I think, suffice to say, it's certainly created a bit of a buzz. Now, thank you very much for everyone who emailed in, and we've had a good look at them all this week, a lot of good points made, proving, as if we didn't already know, that Midweek Motorsport listeners are right on the case as far as motorsport's concerned. If you have no idea what we're talking about, or if you're one of the many people who've emailed in and said, I didn't hear it and I'd like to hear it again, then if you go to www.0157.org and head for Listen On Demand in the first half hour of Series 2, Episode 6, Tim, is that right?
That was last week, yes.
Yeah, then you will be able to hear the Wolfgang Ulrich interview in full and make up your own mind. Right, that's got that out of the way. I wonder if we'll be quite as contentious tonight. Well, coming up, we'll have a brand new... Is it a brand new, or is it just a different panel game?
It's quiz a brand game? New panel game.
I always should.
Specifically shudder. Because of the content of the rest of tonight's show.
Right, and that is mainly going to be our stock car season preview.
And that's our season preview. We're not going to be talking about things like the ASA late model series or...
What? Anything. The North... Well, you've got all that on my motorsport calendar, I presume. We'd be going through that as well.
No, we're only going to talk about the big two.
Okay then, that all to come later on tonight's Midweek Motorsport, but as tradition dictates, we'll start off with the motorsport headlines, which are next with Tim Globecast
Radio. All the week's motorsport news, Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
Thanks, John. Well, the news this week once again starts with those lovely people at Spyker, and joining me to discuss that is our F1 correspondent Nick Damon. Good afternoon, Nick. Or good evening,
afternoon,
Nick.
Jim, how are you?
I'm fine. You are indeed in somewhere where it is evening. We're going to start with Spyker, as I said, and the news about Thiago Montero.
Oh God, he's not come back, has he?
Well, he has been conspicuously quiet.
The only thing I've got right, please say no.
He's been conspicuously quiet since he was announced as not driving for Midland or Spyker this year. And maybe
didn't
John...
Didn't he even test in a World Touring car, didn't he, last week?
He's done quite a few things, yes. He drove a Seat Leon for the SEAT team last week. John Hindhoff is still with us as well.
Hello.
In case he wants to butt in and talk about Thiago Monteiro. I don't think he does.
I don't think I've got anything to say about Thiago Monteiro. I don't think anybody should have, to be quite honest.
Basically, he said two things. First of all, that he was as surprised as anyone when Sutil was confirmed as the second driver at Spyker.
Not a surprise. No. That's wrong. He was surprised as anyone. No one else was surprised.
Well, no. I think Sutil was a bit of a surprise, but only the fact that it wasn't Monteiro was not a surprise to anybody.
No, true. That's true.
And given the fact that since they've signed Sutil, they've since signed about 72 other drivers with money, Monteiro wasn't only missing out by one, but probably missing out by about an entire grid.
Well, he has claimed that he was offered a test role.
Which one? Did he get to test what, every 15th race?
Yes, not just at Spyker, but also at Toro Rosso.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. That's a very odd bunch again, isn't it, Toro Rosso?
We'll come on to Toro Rosso slightly later on. But he says he's going to take a break from Formula 1 this year with a view to securing a full-time race drive in 2008.
Why doesn't he go to Champ Car where he'd be very happy? The amount of money he's got to pay for a nice drive and he's all right and he'd probably do okay. Especially this year where it's all even Stevens again with a new car.
The future
Sports
promises
car.
To be even more exciting, he says.
Yeah, well, exactly. Why isn't he a Le Mans series? Don't get it wrong. I know we say things like, oh, he's rubbish, but he's still, in all honesty, he's still an excellent driver. Anybody who runs F1, Alex, you indeed is an excellent driver, but he won the Bruce McLaren Award last week. But compared to other F1 drivers, they're B pluses, where you need to be at least an A to be an F1 driver. They're still excellent drivers compared to the vast majority of guys who are peddling cars around the world.
Monteiro claims he's in advanced discussions at the moment and will be able to reveal more shortly.
When the check's cleared, you mean?
He'd like to thank all his fans, sponsors and friends in Portugal and around the world.
Well, that's a couple of minutes.
Ferrari is suddenly...
That's nasty. That is very nasty, Nick.
Well, we managed to do it in 5 seconds.
True.
The Ferrari team have decided that they're going to drive quickly in testing now.
Yes,
after
that was
potentially
very, very
sandbagging in the original test.
Yeah, that was a bit interesting, wasn't it, Tim? I must admit, I was... When we were having this, you said, what do you want to talk about? I was looking at all the testing times, and I was sitting there going, Ferrari, what's going on? But they've been nowhere. Then suddenly, yesterday, they pinged the top of the times with Felipe by over half a second from Kimi Raikkonen. And my other big thing was, Renault haven't been very fast all winter, so Kovalainen was third. So, again, it looks like all the guys can go fast at certain times, and it'd be very interesting to see. I think no one...
Would that be when they're running with low fuel and new tyres?
Well, especially that's where it's a good second, but I think it's a case, you just don't know. The reliability of the car seems very, very good. I mean, Massa and Raikkonen, I've got to choose these times in front of me, did 262 laps between them around Barcelona, which is a really long track. And then again, you look at, Lewis Hamilton did 180 on his own, and Alonso did 970. So all the cars seem to be running reasonably well.
Well, there have been a few problems, haven't there? Because Robert Kubica had an engine failure on Monday, didn't he?
But also apparently, I read, he caused a red flag. He stopped out on track to do a dry tank run. So basically, they ran the car around till it ran out of fuel to see when it would run out of fuel. They just held the session up for everyone.
That's a good idea.
Well, I think it's obviously...
Know if Heidfeld, because he caused a red flag as well, didn't he?
I'm
was he on the same strategy?
Not sure, but it's interesting to do. Obviously, basically, they obviously need to know, how much fuel they need to leave in the bottom of the tank before it even gets fucked up anymore, because obviously it's not absolutely dry. It's probably got, obviously it's a Honda from 2 years ago. It's got 11 litres stashed away somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's interesting thing to do. I would have thought, though, it's something you do on a private testing day, not where you're going to ruin everyone else's day. And then they miss it.
Maybe you do want to ruin everyone else's day.
Oh, you're very Machiavellian.
What was all this problem with Ferrari's electronics, or was that
a lot of this is the problem with Ferrari and stories with Ferraris, and I'm sure you guys know, is when you go to Italy, they've got two or three papers which are devoted to sport in Italy, all of which have to write 2 pages on Ferrari every day. And therefore, Kimi Raikkonen sneezes is worth 3 columns. It's a normal problem where a car comes in. I think Massa had a slight little wiring loom fire Monday, or it could have been yesterday. And yeah,
a slight wiring loom fire.
Yeah, electrical fault caused a minor fire in the wiring loom. It happens all the time when cars are first running because they don't get the heat shielding right. And therefore, they had to replace half the wiring loom, which took them 2 hours. You know, that's one of the... But yeah, suddenly it becomes a major electrical fault in their interior. No, that's what happens. What you don't want to happen is what happened to Stewart, I think in, about 90, their second year, so 99 or 98, when they hadn't had a chance to run the cars in high temperature. They got to the grid in Melbourne, and both cars caught fire in between stopping and the race starting.
Yeah.
The same wiring loom issue.
Let's move on. The Spanish banking giant Banco Santander has been linked with a deal to title sponsor the British Grand Prix, according to the Mail on Sunday.
Eh?
What?
The bank...
Foster has pulled it... But okay, fair enough. I thought hasn't ING Bank got virtually all of them now?
Apparently not. Banco Santander, which, as you may know, owns what used to be Abbey National.
I didn't know that.
Is he not a personal sponsor or a sponsor of McLaren and Alonso?
He's a sponsor of McLaren, yes. And Alonso, yes. According to the Mail on Sunday, Nigel Mansell says that he hopes the title sponsorship deal will secure the event's future. It's
not
absolutely fantastic news, said Mansell. Hopefully it means that the future of the British Grand Prix is now insured for a good few years to come.
Well, the British Grand Prix's future is insured, but it could be moving up the road to Donington.
Well, it's not going to go to Mansell's circuit, though, is it? No matter how bullish he is about it.
He's not even allowed to build a cart circuit. He's not even going to put one circuit down
there. This is a bit of guerrilla marketing, then, from Banco Santander to get back at ING.
Well, I think one thing that's very interesting is obviously this is the first year where we haven't got any fags advertising. I know that the subliminal stuff on the Ferrari, but that is so negative. And instantly you see high-tech and finance taking over the slack.
Yeah, but why have Foster's pulled out of the British Grand Prix then?
No, Foster's pulled out all their F1 sponsorships.
Really?
All they sponsored F1. It was Orange and Foster's did most of the track sponsorship over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I think British made that as
in
well.
In the countries where cigarette sponsorship wasn't allowed.
Foster's announced they're pulling out purely for marketing. One of the reasons being is they don't actually sell Foster's all around the world. I mean, whilst we go hurrah Foster's, it's not actually that big a brand outside the UK.
Yeah.
So the other, so they
Rudy Luton or somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, they pulled out basically for commercial reasons back in July last year, and then they weren't okay. And obviously the key one they're not covering is the Australian Grand Prix.
Because obviously no one in Australia drinks Foster's anyway, and
no,
never
they
has done.
No, they all drink Coopers.
No, VB.
It depends which state you're in.
That's true, very
Coopers.
True, Tim.
And I've met
VB is a very
Coopers.
Western
nice
Australia beer, isn't it?
Victoria. That's it, Victoria. And basically, they won't drink it in Sydney.
No.
Right, so
new Sydney.
Possibly a new sponsor for the British Grand Prix. Well, it has to be a new sponsor for the British Grand Prix. If it's not going to be these guys, who else is in the frame, Nick? Because clearly the BRDC don't want to have to stump up all that money for themselves, do they?
No, I mean, it's one of the few things they can keep. I would expect it'll be... it'll either be Banco Santander, and it'll be ING, though I would have thought that Vodafone would be quite keen as well.
Yeah.
A spokesman for Silverstone, incidentally, said, we cannot confirm it, it's a rumour at the moment.
Well, they can confirm it, can they?
Which I suspect means that it's going to happen.
Mm.
Now let's move on to Scuderia Toro Rosso.
Oh, it's lovely to hear that back again.
We mentioned them at the start of this news, and we're now going to go into more detail, because on Monday there were several news reports saying that on Tuesday, which was yesterday, Scuderia Toro Rosso would confirm that its two drivers for 2007 would be Scott Speed and Vittorio Liuzzi.
That hasn't happened, has it?
What they actually announced on Tuesday, which was yesterday, was that Vettantonio Liuzzi would again drive for the team in 2007, but for unspecified contractual reasons, a similar renewal for Scott Speed.
That's not Scott Speed's contract, is it?
No, of course, it's a contract between Newman Haas and Sebastian Bourdais.
He wasn't even at the launch on Tuesday.
But somebody had a conversation with me about Gerhard Berger, and I can't remember what it was. It might have been you, John. Where he was very scathing about what he'd done, and I was thinking, well, but really, I mean, what is he doing? He's damning them with the faintest of praise about commitment and this sort of stuff. Now, yeah, he's also tarring Liuzzi with a brush. Now, I think certainly Tim and I, and Tim, because he's been following Scott for longer than I have because of the S3000 and the GP2 element, you know, has pointed out that Scott has a number of shortcomings, which the only thing he's got going for him is his name and his nationality. But Liuzzi, you know, one thing about Liuzzi, they're throwing around words like commitment. I mean, there are many things you could accuse Vitantonio of last year, but lacking commitment was not one. The fact that he had so much commitment was one of the main reasons he was throwing it off a track.
I read somewhere that Berger has said, and this is a quote, and I wrote this down, it's going to take as long as necessary, and it could be as late as Melbourne, but he is in pole position for the seat. I find it remarkable that they are prepared to wait right up until the evening of the first race weekend.
Well, I think it comes out of the fact that it looks to me like he's on the back burner. It's not like there's any money issues. The contract he was on was signed, you know, before last year. It was a 2-year with another year option, basically, which would be signed by Red Bull. That's no issue on that whatsoever. It must come down to the fact they are trying to wheedle Bourdais out. And I did notice that Bourdais wasn't particularly glowing about his reports on the new car over in US. So whether there's a kind of an attempt to see whether they can wheedle him out of Newman Haas or out of Champ Car, because they're not much of a Champ Car one, losing that much. I mean, perhaps the blow might be softened if they got a nice swapsie and got Scott Speed on return of an American. But, you know, it's not really, again, a very positive message. And if they are that bothered about Scott Speed, then in all honesty, there are three or four other guys who you will pick up before him.
Yes.
Their nominal test driver, Neil Yarny.
Including the guy who I believe isn't brilliant, but is better than Scott Speed, but got fired halfway through last year, which is Christian Kleen. You know, so you sit there going, what is going on? You know, why are they doing this? I mean, as you said, I wasn't aware that Scott wasn't at the launch. Because it was such a non-event of a launch, no one's bothered going. But that's not a good sign at any level.
He wasn't at the launch. I think you've got to read a lot into that, because if he was on the fringes, then... And I think it's, what Berger has said... but it's a bit like the chairman of a football club saying, I've got every confidence in the manager, saying, oh, he's in pole position for the seat. That, to me, just says, well, yeah, we might give it to him if we can't find the person we really want.
The last person I remember getting into, starting the season with this faint praise hanging over them, was Luciano Berti, and he lasted three races before he got kicked out of Jaguar, ended up in Prost, because it wasn't there, and they were looking for excuses to get rid of him. In fact, again, same team, Stewart did the same thing with Jan Magnussen in his second year as well. There was no confidence in him, and they were looking for a way of getting out.
Now, interestingly, having said what Berger said, the team principal, Franz Tost, said basically that they were expecting to go better. And with regard to the drivers, he said, I think we can make a step forward with the new car and the new engine. We have one very experienced driver, and the second, we will see. So clearly, he
doesn't know who it is either.
Well, exactly.
I'm not wishing to be too... Liuzzi's done 21, 22 Grand Prix. He's not very experienced.
Well, he's also done a season of Formula 3000.
Well,
What
I was going to say there, Nick, was has he let the cat out the bag? Does he know who they're after or who they might possibly have? And I wouldn't describe Liuzzi as a very experienced driver. He has some experience, so
it's a total. I mean, yeah, these. I mean, the only other thing this could be is an element of smokescreen to take the focus off the car.
Car looks all right. I mean, it's what we expect it to be. The RB3, you mean?
Yeah, I mean,
the STR2.
I just don't know. I mean, the bottom three teams, or two or three teams, actually, Gurri have been very quiet and just getting on with it. But the amount of comments they've managed to get out of non-announcers and things not happening and moaning is quite unbelievable.
And also launching a car without telling anyone really that they're going to launch it.
Well, that's best.
At least Super Gurri have announced the launch date.
Yeah, but Super Gurri, don't forget, failed the crash test, didn't they?
Yes, but they have announced the launch date for their car,
which
will take place in Melbourne in a month's time.
Surprisingly. I think it's interesting what you've brought that up, Tim, and Tost again said, they're not intending to back down over this controversy with Williams and Spyker, isn't it, threatening to go to court. He says... We think we are within the regulations. It's not necessary to make any compromise. I don't know what compromise we can make, because either you are within the regulations or without the regulations, and we will be willing to battle in court if it gets that far. Then we have to fight it out, he said. We can't influence if they decide to go to court. I don't think it's good for us, but in the end we'd have to accept it. So, I mean, you can understand his position there, though, guys, can't you? Because they need to get a car out, they need to start testing in Bahrain, they get the second car at the second test in Bahrain, and basically they've got to move forward. They can't be waiting for Williams and Spyker to decide what they're going to do with it, because it would just waste too much time.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, they're fighting their corner. Williams and Spyker are fighting their side as well. And it's very, very likely the cars will be declared legal. There'll be lots of grumbling because, you know, they've got the ultimate say-so of Max on their side. And Max is saying that's okay, and the 15% intellectual property is how it is. We all know they're bending the rules, but then it's not the first time rules have been bent in motor racing.
Classic comment. We have our own car, said Tost, which is, and I'll just listen to what I say here. We have our own car, which is in many aspects, totally different to the Red Bull car. The design of the car is being made by Red Bull Technology together with Adrian Newey in cooperation with the designer of Toro Rosso. I think we are within the regulations. And he also said he would not accept scoring Constructors Championship points, which is the compromise that's been suggested. No way is he going to accept that, according to the sources.
The interesting thing is that Adrian Newey actually works for Red Bull Technologies and not for Red Bull Racing.
Yeah, they've done that very clever, haven't they?
Yes.
There we are. Let's move on to another story.
Oh, our new life in Everwood. Evernham. Yes.
Ray Evernham has invited Michael Schumacher to drive for him in NASCAR.
How fantastic!
Actually, didn't you? I invited Michael Schumacher to drive my radio control car, but so didn't he wasn't interested.
Evernham said, "I'll put him in a red car anytime he wants to come over here and try it. A lot has changed in recent years. These cars are looked on as much more sophisticated than they used to be. I think he'd find them technical enough to keep him happy."
He did say it wouldn't just be a red car. He said it would be a real good car.
Hey.
That's fantastic.
Now, obviously, that would be driving alongside Casey Kane and Elliot Sadler.
I think you find that's pronounced Casey Kahane.
Only where you come from.
Only on the TV stations that I see the coverage on, yes.
Do we think either of those drivers would move aside in a Rubens Barrichello style?
Oh no, not at all.
Side, possibly.
Bump drafting. That's interesting, isn't it?
Oh dear.
It would. I think it'd be funny. I think it'd be funny to happen. I don't think he'll do it. He's got too much to lose, and he's not the same type of driver as Montoya is. He's not the same kind of throw around muscly type driver as Montoya is. He's not the sort of driver to drive around problems. We saw that a few years ago at the Race of Champions, didn't we? He couldn't adapt to all the different cars quickly enough and got beat by Kovalainen. Seen to remember. It's not for him, Nick, is it, surely? He's got too much to lose.
No, he's not going to be doing that at any point. No, I mean, it's a good way of buying a bit of publicity, you know, but it's basically, I mean, Michael is obviously doing kart tests. He's kissing his kart, and either he might enter the World Kart Championship and Karen keeping his hand in, but he's not going to go out and do another major series. He's got nothing to prove, nothing to lose.
I think we should invite him to, present the programme. Do a whole programme and see if he wants to come and do that.
We'll invite him.
That seems very
he could come and drive my Audi if he wants to. That'd be nice.
According to Associated Press, Ray Evernham has close links to Daimler Chrysler. Not sure why that's relevant at all.
Because it's vaguely German.
Vaguely German.
Yeah.
That's what we should rename them now. Vaguely German. The VG group.
That's really pretty much. Hello, I'm vaguely German, and I very much like to drive your car.
I ate a sausage once, therefore that qualifies me to play for Germany. Moving on, I think.
Sebastian Bourdais again.
Right, yes.
He's been beaten by Justin Wilson in testing for Champ Car, new car.
He has. That was at Houston, wasn't it?
In the rain.
On the road course at Houston. Very, very, very wet.
Yes.
Now, is this the track that they raced on at Houston last year? I.e., in the car park of the... in the car park of the dome?
As far as I know, no.
Right, because I was going to say... couldn't understand why they were going to test there.
This is described as a road course, whereas the other would have been described as a temporary street circuit, wouldn't it?
So where are the race? Where were the testing then?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with Houston.
Because they raced in Reliance Park, didn't they? Reliance Park last year, and it was like corrugated cardboard, the surface, in texture, not in...
not in not, makeup.
Not in makeup, no, it wasn't made from papier-mâché. Paul Tracy third.
Yes, but look how far behind, a second and a half off the pace. But then again, he only did 14 laps on Monday, whereas the others were all doing 60.
Mm.
Will Power's another one who didn't do very many laps.
Graham Rahal in sixth place, but 3 seconds off the pace. Ahead of him, Nelson Felipe. Ryan DL, star for me of the Daytona 24, down in 12th position, just behind Oriol Servia.
Robert Doornbos up in fourth as the fastest of the Minardis.
Catherine Legg, 15th out of the 15 who tested.
Dale
Coyne Racing. Dale Coyne Racing, she seems to have thrown her hat in the ring with that. Lord, hasn't been confirmed yet, Tim, has it?
It hasn't, she's been testing for several different teams.
Yeah, she tested.
Well, I mean, basically, they had to find, she's the token slow woman for kart, and obviously Danica's the token slow woman for...
We're not mentioning her name now until she actually does something.
All right, well, Sarah Fisher's got the ables, and I always think Sarah's quite good, so I'm backing her as the girl to get to watch.
It's that other woman, T-O-W, is...
Fair enough.
Is the other one that you mentioned. That was sent in as an email, which I thought was very funny. And I think we will continue to call her that. On that note, I noticed that Liz Halliday's got a drive with Aston Martin in the Le Mans series, and at Sebring, not the works team, but BMS, I think it is, who are running one of the teams. And we will be speaking to Liz in the next couple of weeks back in the studio. So if you've got any emails, any questions, rather, you'd like to pose to Liz, find out why she's left the American Le Mans series and come to Europe to race, studio at 0157.org.
If it's happening in motorsport, you'll hear about it on Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport.
Globecast Radio's definitive international motorsport magazine show.
Globecast Radio.
Well, as we have already mentioned, this Midweek Motorsport is our preview to the season of NASCAR Nextel Cup and NASCAR Busch Series. And before we kick off, we said right at the start of the programme that we had a mega, absolutely bumper post bag last week. This to prove that not everything was about Audi. Neil Smith in San Francisco said... this came in the middle of last week, end of last week. He said, I'm sitting at home sick today and happened to catch the silly grid spot selection show for the NASCAR Bud Shootout on Speed. I don't normally watch NASCAR, but remembered you guys mentioned Boris said will be involved this year thanks to his poll at Daytona last year. I was on the edge of my seat as Boris picked the number, and though he didn't end up with Paul, he got third. Suffice to say, I cheered a lot, and I guess I'll have to watch the race now. Boris rules, says Neil Smith from San Francisco.
Should we talk about the Bud Shootout at all then?
Well,
gloss over that.
I think we clearly Dex, the Declan Brennan, our here on the Oval, joins us for this, of course, tonight, as you'd expect. Interesting tyre compounds in evidence in the Bud Shootout.
I couldn't work out if I was watching A1GP or Rallycross.
Or in fact, the Andros Trophy.
Yeah, exactly. It was almost like, at one stage, it was like watching a set of F-22 aircraft vectoring through the sky, moving, you know, going forward and sideways at the same time. I actually thought at one point it was quite frightening, very exciting, but not necessarily something I would like to have been involved in terms of driving.
Not in a good way.
Not in a good way. The movement was just the movement even before anybody got touched up the back by Dale Jr. and we'll come to that in a minute. Just phenomenal. Goodyear provided a massively, massively hard tyre, a right-sided tyre for this event, which clearly is taking far too long to warm up. They were racing pretty cool conditions at night, don't forget. You know, and it is still the winter, so it's not that warm in Florida, especially when the sun goes down. And the cars were just all over the place. The head-on shots on the back straight.
It was great for spectators, though, wasn't it? I mean, great TV.
Well, the head-on shots on the back straight, when they were sort of drifting five across, it was some of the most frightening television I've ever seen. it was just... when there's 43 of them in the early laps, and then probably... thinking about as the race goes on and the sun goes down, because the race is starting later this year, so we will get a significant drop in track temperature. It's going to be when they come in for, you know, after, say, for example, a long yellow and everybody's put new tyres on. Tony Stewart was really, really forthright in his criticism of Goodyear and what the tyres they produced. There was some, it led to some spectacular saves. One particular one from Kyle Busch, I remember, where he had the thing... fishtailing all over the place, and how he kept it out of the wall, I'll never know. Casey Kane was another. The car's skittish, to say the least, I thought.
Skittish, very good.
It provided for some quite exciting racing, even when the cars were just in a straight line. So, very interesting. And it bodes... I'm not sure it bodes well for the weekend.
Well, you mentioned the fact that they're starting the race later this weekend. 8:15 p.m. start in the UK, so that must be 3:15 in the afternoon in Florida. So
2 o'clock, it starts on Fox.
That's when the programme starts, yeah?
Yes, yes.
The race starts at 3:15, and apparently the reason for this is so that they're guaranteed some cold night running.
And I've said this many times in the past, I'll tell you now whose hands that drops the race into.
Juan Pablo Montoya.
No, in Hendrick's Motorsport and Jimmy Johnson. I'm not sure I've ever seen a team who get dialed in better for the change in temperature. You see, we saw it towards the end of last season, we saw it at Fontana. I'm not sure there's a better team and driver combination in terms of dialing a car in to take advantage of the drop in temperatures as Jimmy Johnson. And I know I love him and all, and it's one of the reasons he won last year. And I'm going to nail my colours to the mast now, and they're blue and yellow in the Lowe's corporate design, and I think it's going to be a Jimmy Johnson, no rout, but a Jimmy Johnson will win the Daytona 500 again. He will defend.
We need to talk, before we move on to the, I suppose, the preview of the whole season, we need to talk about a couple of stories that have come out of the qualifying. Matt Kenseth and Casey Kane's times disallowed for, quotes, unapproved aerodynamic devices.
Yes, and I wonder, did their engineers, Kenny Francis and Robbie Reiser, do what Chad Knaus did last year, which was make the adjustments during technical inspection in front of the stewards. He was that brazen. We're in a position where we are now 8 days, what is it, what are we now, 3-4 days away from the race, and Francis and Reiser are likely to miss any further participation in the events, and probably the next 4 or 5 events as well, just as Chad Knaus did last year. And of course it didn't proved to be a problem for Darian Grubb and Jimmy Johnson when they won the event. But NASCAR, since last July, have basically said, no, we're going to come down much heavier on cheating.
And this is basically, they had, and I quote, holes in places where they would normally be sealed, and these were not. So they've tried something that they must have known. And they're both going to the back of the grids in their Gatorade Duel races on Thursday. Yes. And it's not just them either, because the Darrell Waltrip's car had some, quote, unidentified substance in the manifold.
Well, Darrell Waltrip's car would have needed a time machine. I think it's Michael Waltrip. It was the...
Michael Waltrip, yes, sir.
Technically, yeah, they did discover in technical inspection that Darrell Waltrip had used a time machine, and now Michael Waltrip's Toyota foreign substances in the intake manifold.
Now they've claimed it was oil. Waltrip and his employees called it oil. They replaced the manifold, and Waltrip qualified before NASCAR seized the car. The car's now been impounded, and NASCAR Vice President for Corporate Communications, Jim Hunter, said, "We don't know how long we'll keep it. Our inspection team was not comfortable that that was oil."
Well, he'll be at the back of the grid in what won't be his race car. He's, you know, Toyota are already behind the eight ball somewhat because the Waltrip organization don't have any owner points. He will now have to race his way into the event. There's no guarantee that he's going to make the event. He's going to be in his backup car. It's going to be interesting. And one of the reasons that I'll definitely be glued to both Gatorade 150s on Thursday. But it's one of these things where, you know, this hasn't raised that many eyebrows in terms of reaction from people involved in NASCAR. For example, Larry McReynolds, who's the analyst for Fox TV, said, "I'm not too proud to say we used to coat our air cleaners with propylene oxide." And as we discussed off the air, very simply, that gets sucked into the engine. And as you said,
it becomes an octane booster.
Exactly.
Now, interestingly, a noted cup engine builder who declined to be named said it, quote, "wasn't possible under normal operation for lubricating oil to leak into an engine's manifold." There'd be something seriously wrong with the engine if it did.
Absolutely.
Because that means it would be...
physics.
It would be blowing back into...
Yes.
Into the, and I'm presuming they're talking about the intake manifold here rather than the exhaust manifold.
It is
manifold.
The intake manifold.
Yes, it is
so
the intake manifold.
It basically means it would be blowing back into the intake manifold, which, if that was happening, there's something seriously wrong with the engine. Very odd. Very, very odd indeed.
Well, it made me, and again, before we get onto a preview, I'm just for laughs, I delved into the archives to come up with some of my finest examples of cheating. And I think my all-time favourite has to be Darrell Waltrip in the 70s, when the car driver were weighed with the radio, the drinks bottle, and the helmet in the car. So
that was with a drinks bottle filled with mercury or something.
Lead. Junior Johnson produced the lead radio, the lead drinks bottle, and the lead crash helmet.
That's fantastic.
Oh yes. The lead crash helmets, which of course all of them were changed while the cars lined up before the race started. Another thing they used to do was they drilled strategic holes in the roll cage and then filled the roll cage with buckshot. And then during the race, the
buckshot Jones would that be?
Yes. Well, they filled the roll cage with buckshot, and on certain corners during the race, the centrifugal forces would force the buckshot out of the holes, and it would roll down the banking into the infield.
That's
all evidence disappeared. That's genius. But my absolute favourite, this is just magnificent, is the team who developed the massively heavy suspension part that was designed to fall off within the first couple of laps of the race, which could then be replaced with one the correct weight and then it fully attached properly. Just magnificent. I absolutely love it. And we could go on and on and on, as we did off air. The problem is the corporate nature of NASCAR now, and the media exposure that the whole series has, means that this isn't funny anymore. This is major corporations being associated with cheats.
Oh, no, it is funny.
No,
I think it is.
But it's major corporations and sponsors being associated with cheats. People just, it's just not the same anymore. You just can't do it to the same extent.
Well,
and NASCAR have to come down heavily on the cheats.
Right, I agree cheating is bad, but creative interpretations of the rules, like the famous case, and I've been to Daytona, and there is a whole part of the Daytona USA Museum which is dedicated to cheating, which I think is very cool. My favourite one is the team who, race after race, were getting so much better gas mileage than everyone else that eventually they got protested, and the NASCAR officials took away the fuel tank and tested it race after race, and it was perfectly the right size, and eventually I think for sheer devilment, the team, whilst whilst the tank was out of the car being tested by NASCAR, took the car out and raced it for 5 laps because it had a huge amount of fuel line between the tank and the carburetor and the dry brake, obviously, on the end of it. And as somebody quite rightly said, hey, it says how big the fuel tank is, doesn't say how much line we've got out between the tank and the carburetor, which I think is marvellous. Now, when we come back, we'll start our countdown as we look forward to the 2007 NASCAR Nextel Cup season here on Midweek Motorsport.
The best adult album tracks, incisive comments on cars, coverage of motorsport from around the world. It's a station built around cars and motorsport. It's High Octane, Full Speed Radio, Sky Channel 0157 and 0157.org, Globecast Radio.
So it's the NASCAR Nextel Cup preview show here on Globecast Radio, and we're going to start with the driver who will be carrying the number 0 on his car this season, and that is David Reutemann.
Double 0.
Yeah, in all fairness, give him.
He is Dick Dastardly. I mean, you know, you've left nothing out of his number. I mean, that's terrible. He is the Dick Dastardly of NASCAR Nextel Cup, Burger King and Domino's Pizza sponsored. I tell you, their team catering's fantastic, isn't it? David Reutemann.
I'm not sure about that. I wonder, do they have a team nutritionist, I wonder? Now, the important thing, I went all Irish there, the important thing to note about Dave Reutemann is that he's part of the underwhelming rookie group, and we'll come back to that later, entering next
in the Cup and the Busch Series. He's a rookie, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Biggest problem with David Reutemann, and we'll come back to this a bit later, is a very tough job. He's got a new car and a new team. Obviously, he's got strong veterans to run with in Michael Waltrip and Dale Jarrett, but his big problem is that he is, for the early part of the season particularly, he is a go-or-go-home guy.
Because they've got no manufacturer points.
Absolutely.
They've got no team points, yeah.
Yes, so they have no team points. So, although he's had a fair degree of success, he was third in the 2006 Trap and Krupp Craftsman Truck Series. He was third in the series racing for Toyota, so it's a logical step forward for him. But it's going to be very tough for him and the new team. It's going to be very tough for the veterans. If anybody saw the Bud shootout, Dale Jarrett really struggled. They had no front end grip on the car at all. It will be a real, real struggle for him, and that is when we come to the other members of the Toyota team, we'll be saying exactly the same thing. So right now, I don't see him pulling up any trees at all, and in fact, I see him missing races this season.
In the 01 car, the General Lee, that would be, if we're following the TV similes, then. Mark Martin and Regan Smith sharing that car. Mark Martin doing the lines, share the work, as he retired last year. So
and the year before.
He's beginning to remind me of, there was a lovely moment in the Grammys when they paid tribute to James Brown by leaving a microphone stand empty, and his band leader, which he always used to be, just came on and placed the cloak over the microphone, which of course is what anybody old enough to remember James Brown's, one of his gimmicks was that he'd walk off stage, his cape would be placed over his shoulders as he walked off stage, and suddenly he'd throw it off and he'd run back on and he'd continue to perform, and he did that several times during the night. That's what Mark Martin seems to be doing.
Throwing his cloak over a car.
Just as you think his cape is on and he's got his silver top cane and his top hat and he's walking off into the distance, he throws the ball away and he runs back and he decides to join in again. So his retirement this year consists of 22 races for Gin Racing.
Hendrick Engines in the Chevy, of course. US Army, one of the sponsors of the team, and a new sponsor this year for them, Coca-Cola.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
I don't see, again, I think he's going to struggle this year because Gin Racing in years gone by have struggled mightily, in all honesty. I'm glad he's there. I'm glad he's still there. And I'm certainly, as we always say, in some of the bigger races, particularly and including the 500 this weekend, it'll be great to have him. And you know he'll be a factor at some point. But Yeah, just glad that he's decided to retire and continue to race, whatever that means.
It means he's having an active retirement. The 07 car, the Childress Chevy of Clint Boyer, Jack Daniels, Direct TV, Silviana, SKF, and Shell on that one, new for this year.
Well, the Shell, as you see, Shell are very prominent across the whole of RCR this year, and we have a situation where Kevin Harvick is running in a completely Shell-branded car at different times during the season. But Boyer started to show some potential, and he certainly will have to because the other two drivers in that team proved us wrong last year by obviously making the chase and being factors all season, and Harvick particularly. So Boyer's through his rookie year now. He's not a young rookie, he's an experienced driver, so he's into his second full season. I would be very surprised if we don't see him up the front on a lot of occasions, and he may even get the odd win, but I think he'll have to, in order to sort of cement his position in the team, he's going to have to start to up his game a little bit and reach the levels of Jeff Burton and Kevin Harvick.
Okay, moving on.
The number one car, those of us in Europe not having the champion on board, because nobody changes their numbers, or very seldom do they change their numbers in NASCAR Nextel Cup. The DEI, first the DEI car, Martin Truex Jr. in the Chevy, the Bass Pro Shops car. Same old, same on for Martin Truex Jr., same crew chief in Kevin Mannion, and same sponsor, so pretty much as was.
Yeah, I think what he'd like to think is that the as was will stop there and his performances will actually improve. Although we did see towards the end of last year, the last two or three races, I saw enough of an improvement in him to think that he'll figure more this year. You may remember last year that, to my horror, I picked him to make the chase ahead of Dale Jr. I was quite astonished by his lack of pace, and I'm hoping to see, based on what we saw towards the end of last season, I'm hoping to see, you know, some serious improvements this season. It's still a relatively young team. You know, it's himself, Paul Menard, who is a true rookie, who's running in the is one of the members of the rookie clan this year, and of course Junior himself. So, in all honesty, based on what they did last year, if any of them can make the chase in that lineup, I'd be surprised.
First of the Dodges that we've come to, Kurt Busch for the Penske Jasper team. Weren't we talking about the fact that Penske might go to Toyota, but that doesn't seem to have happened, Dex?
I'm actually, based on what I saw of his performance, his brief performance in what would be a backup car, it's easy to say based on the snippet that we saw and the cameo effectively that we saw in the Budweiser shootout, I think Busch is going to come back with a bang this year. I really do. I think he's had a year with the Dodge. It was a new car, new body shape. He's had another year with the team. I think he himself has said that he thinks he's got all his ducks in a row, and he thinks things are beginning to fall into place, and I think he now feels confident. He now really does feel confident with the team, and I really believe Kurt Busch will be making the chase, and we'll come back to our chase predictions later, but Kurt Busch will be a major factor this year.
Okay, Ward Burton.
Great to see him back full time. We saw a little bit of him last year after quite a long layoff, where he worked specifically with his charities, Jeff's older brother. He's back with Morgan McClure, which is terrific. He'll perform well. We'll see him in the top 10 on occasion, and good luck to him. Delighted to see him back.
And that's all you have to say. So let's move on to Kyle Busch.
Kyle Busch. He got wins last year. He definitely stepped out of, and again, what we said at the start of last year was that he had to step out of his brother's shadow. He absolutely did that without any shadow of a doubt. Hendricks will be looking for him to deliver a lot this year. I think we'll see him make the chase. I think he'll certainly challenge for the title. He'll win races. He's almost a veteran at this point. He has so much experience in Busch and Cup. Hendricks will be expecting a lot from him, and I think he'll deliver. I think we'll definitely see him in the chase.
New crew chief for him this year. His old crew chief disappeared to the 83 car, didn't he? So there is a little bit of familiarisation to go on.
I would certainly, under any other circumstances with any other team, I'd say, yeah, that might be a problem. But I always get the feeling that with Hendrix Motorsport, it's such a slick organisation that they will drop people in. For example, Jay McMurray had a change last year and really struggled at Roush Racing, just as an example, and did almost nothing during the season. Whereas you get the feeling that somebody dropping into the Hendrix organisation, it's such a finely honed machine, I really don't think it's going to be any problem. And we saw, again, a little snippet of that in the shootout at the weekend. So I don't really think Alan Gustafson is going to have any issues with getting up to speed with Kyle Busch this season.
Well, a driver that impressed me in qualifying at the weekend was David Reagan. What can you tell us about him?
Well, I've made spurious notes about the rookies, particularly this season, and the David Reagan story is absolutely bizarre because he's had a brilliant, brilliant qualifying, yeah. And it's certainly part of it's down to the performance of the Yates engines, and obviously you only have to look at the qualifying order to see that the front two rows are dominated by Yates cars. David Reagan was a mobile chicane last season when he raced, to the point where he wasn't given a license. His license was taken away for longer tracks at one point. He's no particular pedigree, really. You know, considering he's replacing Mark Martin in the 6 car, he's driving the 6 car this year with the AAA sponsorship. He's replacing Mark Martin. Mark Martin is a legend, somebody who could drive straight to the Hall of Fame now. He could probably drive to the Baseball Hall of Fame and get in it. But, he's that much of a legend. David Reagan, he really does have his work cut out. There's huge pressure on him, huge pressure, because Roush can't really afford to have somebody with the sponsors they have and with the pressure they have as being the Ford flagship team to have anybody struggling. And granted, he's a great start with his qualifying position, but it's going to be really difficult for him. And once the race drops, or the green flag drops on Sunday, I really can't see him doing anything. I just don't see where the pedigree is to think that he can in any way fill the number six seat.
They must have seen something in him to give him the car, though.
Well, he was the Gong Show winner for Roush a number of years ago, which is where they go. Well, and obviously we've talked in the past about that because Greg Biffle has come from that exercise, and he ran races in the Roush Junior team, the No Fear team, which the lovely Boris races for.
Hurrah.
Yeah, but it's one of these things where I've been scratching my head thinking about this the last couple of days as to what Roush sees in him. If you were to go back and look through his results elsewhere, there's nothing necessarily that gives you the indication that we're going to see anything of the level that Roush would expect this year. But I'm happy to be proved wrong, so we'll just have to see.
Let's move on to Robbie Gordon then.
And the first of the big changes, Dex, because of course a switch to Ford this year and Yates and Roush engines.
Well, apart from Mark Martin, who we've also seen switch from Ford to Chevrolet.
Yeah, but Robbie's switch, you would have thought having a Yates Roush engine this season and at Daytona would have helped him, but man, he struggled in qualifying. It's weird actually seeing a big Ford logo and grill slapped across the front of one of his cars. Yeah, absolutely. Robbie, the problem with Robbie, and we've said it before, is that this is still Robbie Gordon Motorsport. This is his baby. He's only just come back from racing a unicycle and 3 cars at the at the Paris-Dakar, and he
finished 8th or something. I mean, he did all right.
The man is. I love his commitment to motorsport, and I love how much he loves motor racing, and I think if he could do, he'd still want to do the Indy 500, and he'd probably want to do Formula 1 and other things as well, and MotoGP. But
can I quickly just interject while we're talking about Dakar briefly and say Phil Bennett has announced he's going to do it next year?
No surprises. He told me as much. In fact, he told us as much on the radio station at the Autosport show.
Yeah, I obviously missed that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And Michael Verges. I expect to see Michael Verges as well, as Jimmy Campbell Walter and some other UK names as well. But I'm not allowed to do it, apparently. Not without making.
No, not certainly not. But back to Robbie Gordon, who is allowed to do it, thank God. Like every year, I think Robbie will produce some good results. I think he really struggled last year with the Menard engine that was in the car. They really didn't get to grips with it at all. You would imagine he's got a slightly more proven commodity in the Yates Roush power plant. But watching him in qualifying, as they said, they said it best on TV when they said, you know, it was obvious to see which of the quick cars. The quick cars in qualifying are the ones who were literally eating the track up, the ones whose noses were glued to the pavement. Robbie's car was sitting very much upright. There was a big gap between the front valence and the track. Didn't look like the setup was right at all. He struggled. He's got a bit of time, obviously, with the races to come up to make it, but Robbie, he does a great job for sponsors. He's got some fabulous sponsors, and he's obviously racing in Busch as well. And I just don't see, until he merges with somebody or moves his organisation, a bit like what Valvoline did last year with moving in with Evernham's, I think he needs to do that. He needs to get somebody else who can manage things for him. Otherwise, he's going to just continue to be Robbie Gordon with the odd good result and doing his work for his sponsors, because it's just, that's far too much for him to be doing.
Dan Earnhardt Jr. is next.
Ah, yeah.
Now, be careful. They've got a lot of lawyers.
Yes, I'm not going to say anything bad about him, of course.
Or his mother-in-law?
No, not at all. I think everything's been said.
by other people, thank goodness.
My feelings about Dale Jr. are very simple. No matter what he says, this idea, this wrangle over ownership of the team will affect him. Will affect the way he's driving.
And don't forget his contract's up this year, Dex.
Yes, absolutely.
I think the big story this year could be the longer that... this is a bit of a double negative. The longer that we don't hear any news about him re-signing, then the more pressure gets on, because that will become the story, never mind what's going on the track.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Now, they're saying that it'll be all done by May, and that's what they're saying. They want to move away... take the focus away from that at the start of the season, and they haven't managed to.
The biggest story regarding this team, as far as I'm concerned, is the fact that the Miller Brewing Company has issued a challenge to Anheuser-Busch, and up for grabs is Milwaukee's Miller Park,
naming rights for a weekend.
How fantastic is that?
I love that. That's such a great story. We can't underestimate the power of, we say it all the time, and again, I've had it.
The battle of the beer cans.
I sat in a meeting in New York with a man heavily involved in motorsport sponsorship, and he explained to me that the Budweiser deal is absolutely crucial to their branding throughout a huge chunk of the United States, and the junior deal is just, and the number 8, and you know everything about that, and if he moved away and didn't take his number, and there's all sorts of, you know, it's massively important that they get this deal done. He wants more of the company. I'm not sure she wants to give it to him. I think he needs to focus on what he's doing on the track, because it isn't good enough.
I'll say it again, which you know what I'm going to say, don't you? Right now, he will not have the success that he thinks he deserves until he moves away from DEI.
But you see, you've hit the nail on the head. It's what I think he believes it's what he deserves. I don't think his performances on the track have ever... He's never consistently justified the hype. I don't even think he understands precisely how he has to work with Tony Urie Jr. Tony Urie Jr. came back last year. They certainly started to work together better, but I still don't believe he knows. He even admitted it during after the Bud shootout and sort of over the weekend of qualifying, that they were having problems with setup. You know, this is a man who I really don't think knows enough about how to set up his race car. Will he make the chase? I don't think he will this year.
Hasn't he got his NASCAR joker to play, though, that allows him to make the chase, whatever happens?
I think NASCAR wants him to make the chase. I think it's massively important for him, but again, I'm going to pick that he doesn't, like I did last year. I got it wrong. I'm not going to be wrong this year. Anyway, that's Junior, and we'll be talking about him. I no doubt we'll be talking about him a lot this season.
Yes. This challenge from Miller, is it just open to Budweiser, or could we see Coors Light and David Stremme taking part in this three-way battle?
Coors from Golden, Colorado, the biggest single-site brewery in the world.
No, it's purely a
Budweiser thing.
On another radio show at a different time of night, I would explain it's something to do with waving things, basically. That's all I'd say.
Okay. How about Robbie Gordon and Clint Bowyer?
What
about them?
Challenge between them for alcohol related.
Alcohol stakes.
Yes.
Okay. The number 9 car is the Casey Kahane.
Casey Kahane.
Casey Kahane, I tell you, that's how they say it on the telly, and they must be right. For Ray Evenham, I thought we'd get a quick blast of the theme there.
No, we had enough of that in the news.
Interestingly though, Dex, one of the things that I've noticed looking at this is they use a different engine for the restrictor plate races. They use the Penske engine for the restrictor plate races.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And of course, they are caught up in the controversy that we've already talked about in terms of bans and books being thrown at them by NASCAR and starting at the back I don't think it's going to affect them because I think this is it. I think for the last 2 or 3 years, everybody said, oh, this is his breakout year. And last year, if it wasn't for bad luck, he'd have had no luck at all when it came to the chase. Casey Kane is the man now. He really is. He's the man to beat. Casey Kane, Jimmy Johnson, Tony Stewart, the three people who are going to be fighting for this title at the end of the season. He's phenomenally quick. In any other world, he would be the face of NASCAR. If it wasn't for the bizarre, skewed world of the redneck that we live in, that Dale Earnhardt Jr. is the face of NASCAR, any other time or any other sport in which he took part in, he would be the face of it because he's great looking. He's young, he's phenomenally talented.
And you say that in a very manly and heterosexual way, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. He's blisteringly quick. He's a wonderfully, wonderfully fast driver, and it's a great thing to be able to say that he's a fast driver. And I know it sounds funny in racing when everybody's meant to be fast, but Casey Kane is blooming fast. And I think we're going to see fireworks from him if he has to start from the back in the Gatorade 150 Duel on Thursday. Looking forward to that immensely. I'll be putting my feet up on the sofa.
Another Evenham car.
Not there, by the way.
All right. Another Evenham car is the number 10 Scott Riggs Dodge, the Valvoline Stanley Tool sponsored car. That is pretty much a carryover from last year, so they do have some continuity there.
Yeah, and they have. I think what Scott Riggs did last year towards the end of the season on some of the quicker tracks. Let me see, Charlotte, he had a pole position in Charlotte, I think, I haven't got it in front of me, but I think he qualified on the front row at Talladega. This car will, not sticking my neck out too much today, I think Dodge, it's going to be a really good year for Dodge in general, and I do believe that we'll see Scott Riggs occasionally trouble the scores at the front, potentially get the odd win. Don't think he's going to necessarily make the chase. I think he will certainly at times during the season there'll be blips where he will really, really work very well. He obviously infamously got into a fight. Well, he didn't, but his crew got into a fight with the Harvick family, particularly Delaney. Yes, well done, the Scott Riggs crew. One of your crew picked a fight with Delaney Harvick at the end of the last season. but we will see Scott Riggs in that vivid Valvoline coloured car. Up the front on regular occasions this season. He could be a surprise package. I'd put a question mark by him because he could be one of those guys who sneaks his way into the chase.
You're listening to Midweek Motorsport on Sky Channel 0157, Globecast Radio. That was the voice of Declan Brennan. And he, along with myself and Tim Gray, will be back in our NASCAR Nextel Cup season preview when we'll be talking about the 11 Chevy of Denny Hamlin next.
The best adult album tracks, incisive comment on cars, coverage of motorsport from around the world. It's a station built around cars and motorsport. It's high octane, full speed radio. Sky Channel 0157. And 0157.org.
Welcome back to Midweek Motorsport, where we're looking at the 2007 NASCAR Nextel Cup season. We've reached car number 11, the Rookie of the Year by some margin last year, Denny Hamlin, in the FedEx Chevy for Joe Gibbs Racing. He did well last year, Declan. Is he going to make even more progress this year?
Well, even more progress this year would mean arguably winning the title, really.
That's all he's got to do, mate. That's the only place he's got to go.
He was third last year. Third last year with only 2 wins. Lots of very strong qualifying. That is one of the things he does extremely well. He's a very, very good qualifier. Getting the car, you know, one of the keys, particularly with the way the point system works, is getting the car home. And he's done a lot of that. He's good at the car, too, so... What he needs to do is he needs to translate a little bit of that qualifying speed into more into racing, into his racing, get a slightly higher finishes. I think he'll make the chase again. I think he's in with a fabulous team. I like Mike Ford as a race engineer. He's got absolute continuity there. I'm seeing him definitely in the chase. I'd like to see him get a few more race wins this season, because two wins, both at Pocono, isn't a great return on his talent. But then again, it was his rookie year, so we'll see a lot more from him this year.
Okay, Ryan Newman.
One of the longest contracts in NASCAR. He's signed till 2012 for the Penske Jasper team. New crew chief for the last couple of races of last year, Mike Nelson, who was named the crew chief in December for the whole season for this year.
It's very, very odd. Ryan Newman doesn't have Kurt Busch's excuse of not being able to of getting used to a new car. Ryan Newman's been working with Dodge and with this team for quite a while now. What's slightly worrying is that he doesn't seem to have been able to replicate his qualifying speed that he seems to have, you know, that he can turn on and off with his racing at all in the last couple of years. And it's not necessarily even bad luck. He just hasn't been, the car and himself, they just haven't been up to speed, literally. I'm not really seeing where that's going to change. Maybe my Nelson will help. Difficult to know. We'll know after the first couple of races, but I'm not seeing him making the chase this year. So okay. I know that's a surprise, because he's one of sort of the young guys who always seems to be at the front and who should be winning, contesting for race wins every weekend. I'm not seeing him making the chase.
Let's take the next two together then. Joe Namacek and Sterling Marlin.
No tridecaphobia in NASCAR, then, as the number 13 is there.
None whatsoever. Joe Namacek, absolute veteran now. He'll do a...
As is Sterling Marlin, of course.
Oh, my goodness, together. They're doing a lot of races. They've got a lot of races between them over the last 20 years. I don't really see Namacek doing anything this year. It's a step down, really, to go to Gin Racing, quite honestly. We're going to see him with main sponsors for 18 races. If he gets to do all the races, I'll be surprised. And with Sterling Marlin, a huge fan favourite, back with Waste Management as the main sponsor for the Gin Racing team, which was the MB2 team. I'm really not seeing anything at all from either of these guys in terms of race wins. If they finish every week between 10th and 25th, I think they'll be happy. I know that even with Hendrick Engines, you know, and sort of with the impetus of a new team, almost, I'm just not seeing a great deal from them. They're moving off into the distance, into the land of Chialis and things like that.
We have the rookie next.
The rookie Paul Menard.
Yes,
15.
Saw enough of him at the end of last season with his sort of when he started to sniff a little bit more around the Nextel Cup, to think that we might see something from him this year.
He's got Tony Urie Senior working as his crew chief this year, Dex.
Absolutely, and don't forget, in the number 11 DEI Busch Theories car, he was the almost the moral champion of Busch, because he was the first Busch regular. And to finish outside of the Bushwhacker. So he even won a Bush race last year. He's a rookie. He's probably the strongest rookie as regards to ones who've graduated from Bush. Oh, I could see him challenging.
Out of the three of them, you mean?
Yeah. There aren't that many. I've got to say, I could see him towards the end of the season when he's had a little bit more time with the team and the car. I could certainly see him challenging for top tens, top fives. I think he might surprise us there during the season.
Okay, Greg.
16 and 17. Let's take them together. Two Yates Roush cars. Greg Biffle and Matt Kenseth. Biffle struggling for a full-time sponsor. Matt Kenseth, we already know about his problems early on in the season. But how are they going to fare in the full season, Dex?
Greg Biffle, on paper, should be. Challenging should be one of the guys you'd put in the same category as Tony Stewart, Casey Kane, and Jimmy Johnson. And if we were to spread things out in terms of divisions, I would say he's top of Division 2, banging on the door for promotion into the top division. I think if it wasn't for a bit of bad luck over the last couple of years and losing their way slightly with the team, I think he'd be absolutely there. I think the speed's there. He had too many finishes way down the field last year to be able to consistently challenge, and therefore he missed the chase. He will definitely make the chase this year, and he will definitely be one of the people challenging for the title. So and absolutely ditto for Matt Kenseth. Matt Kenseth and Robbie Reiser together are an absolute dream team.
How about JJ Yaley then?
This poor Matt Kenseth, he's so good, we only give him 10 seconds.
Well, you said ditto, which means that everything that you've said about Greg Biffle counts as his time as well.
Oh, well, Matt Kenseth will definitely make the chase. Matt Kenseth, just briefly, will be up the front all year. He'll qualify at every race about 22nd, and he'll finish fourth every week, and he'll win the title.
So, he's taking the mantle of one of the older, wilier drivers now,
absolutely.
Is he?
Absolutely, he's brilliant at that. Matt Kenseth doesn't care about qualifying, it's all about racing, and he's something he's brilliant at.
Joel Gibbs Racing, JJ Yaley, Interstate Batteries, 18 Chevy.
Let's mention Tony Stewart here as well.
Yeah, well, Yaley got totally overshadowed by Hamlin last year for Joel Gibbs Racing. We'll see a lot more from him this year. Again, very much, whereas Yaley hit the ground, Hamlin hit the ground running last year, I think Yaley took a little bit longer to find his feet, and I think we'll see more from him this year. I think it's a very strong team with Tony Stewart. Tony Stewart, to be brutally honest, the number 20 car, it is without question the car to beat. As it is, it should be every year. He proved that in the Budweiser shootout.
How important is Greg Zippardelli to the success of that team?
Oh, Zippy's huge. You know, only to listen to Tony Stewart, they're a team. They truly are. The whole organisation, they're a real, real team. He works brilliantly with Zippardelli. He trusts them. They clearly a really good understanding, but I think they both have the same attitude. You've often seen in the past, and I tell this from things like, if there's clashes with other teams, and this has happened, and they're like a family, you know, in terms of the way that they'll clash with other people. They're a very, very strong unit. He's very much like Casey Kane, blisteringly quick, incredibly aggressive, which you can be in this type of racing.
Elliot Sadler? Sorry, mate.
Tony Stewart, we've grouped him together with Kane and Jimmy Johnson, and will definitely qualify for the chase this season, and he will unfortunately probably win the title.
Elliot Sadler,
huge surprise for us this year.
That was better. Well done. Got that in quicker.
Well, again,
running with the same Penske Jasper restricted plate race engines, running with the Dodge.
He got his feet under the desk last year, or got his feet into the footwell last year, towards the end of the season after the nonsense musical chairs they had in the middle of the season. He is a welcome, very strong addition to the Evernham Motorsports lineup. Mayfield's gone. Sadler's in. Sadler's going to cause some surprises this year. Sadler, I think, is going to make the chase, and Sadler could even. I think he could be top three on Sunday.
Let's rattle through down the next few. Ken Schrader and John Wood will share the 21 car, the Wood Brothers Yates Roush racing car, with the Air Force sponsorship and Motorcraft.
To some extent, Ken Schrader is basically almost passing the baton to John Wood, who is the grandson of Glenn Wood, one of the Wood Brothers. We'll see John Wood probably more next season, although he's doing enough races that he will be a rookie this season. Don't expect much from the sad thing is Wood Brothers now, even though in the 80s, for example, when I started watching racing, they were a very, very strong team. They're certainly struggling a little bit over the last few years, and we'll see the odd good result, because Ken Schrader is a wily veteran, but I'm not
probably the biggest
deal.
Probably the biggest story there will be Marcus Ambrose running some 10 races in the 47 car, which we'll come to later. Toyota, Dave Blaney, Caterpillar-sponsored car, Bill Davis Racing.
And Mike Skinner,
yeah.
Massively, massively, massively hard job for this lot. They're Bill Davis Racing. Dave Blaney and the number 22 car never really figured last year. You know, so I'm not sure why we should expect with a new team, with a new engine, they're going to do any better this year. I think it's going to be a real struggle for them, and it's a classic indicator of Toyota basically grabbing on to anybody with a strong enough organisation for them to get a foothold into Nextel Cup Racing. Yeah, and so I just go along with the Walter organisation and Red Bull, the Toyota teams, they're going to have a hard time this season.
And finally, in this little section, let's take the two Hendrick Motorsport cars, the 24 and the 25 car. Jeff Gordon, well, what do you say about Jeff Gordon? And Casey Mears, of course, in the 25 car.
Well, just if you look at Jeff Gordon, surprise, surprise, has a lifetime contract. He'll never have to worry about his drive again. He owns Jimmy Johnson's car. He's not going anywhere in that team. Steve Letard, phenomenal.
Needs to make the chase, doesn't he?
He needs to. He needs to do, he came third under the chase rules in 2004. He needs to improve. What's probably been the most notable thing of the last few years is his speed on some tracks, but his overall lack of consistency. He's also had terrible luck at times during the season. I have no doubt he'll make the chase, and I'd love to see him. Back in the chase and back contending for the championship.
Casey Mears in for Brian Vickers in the 25 car.
Never ever quite understood the appeal of Casey Mears. Don't believe he necessarily has the talent or the outright speed. He's never won a race. He's got a great crew chief, as proved last year. A man who's now crew chief, a Daytona 500 winner in Darian Grubb. Jury's out on Casey Mears. Didn't really do it at Ganassi. I do believe that he's never won in Nextel Cup. I'm not sure he will this year.
Midweek Motorsport with John Hindhoff.
Broadcast Radio.
We're back with our rapid fire run through the runners and riders for the 2007 NASCAR Nextel Cup field. 26, Jimmy McMurray, Ford with Yates and Roush. Larry Carter, new crew chief this year, Dex.
Jamie McMurray, the pressure is so much on him this year. He has to perform mightily. He's done nothing last year. He did absolutely nothing. He was dreadful, it has to be said. This is a man who suffered slightly from having such a huge impact when he came into the championship first. He's got another couple of years on his contract, but he really needs to start performing.
Kevin Harvick in the 29 Childress Chevy.
What do we need to say about Kevin Harvick? Absolutely will contest every week. He'll be in the chase. Very little to say. We'll come back to him later on when we go through the chase runners and riders, but the car's going to look fantastic this year in shell cars, I have to say. Absolutely. Well, what more do you need to say that hasn't already been said about him?
Another Chevy, another Childress car, that's Jeff Burton, running out his contract at the end of this year, the 31 car.
Which is big pressure on him, and I think we've seen the best Jeff Burton last year. I'm not so sure he'll make the chase this season. Not really seeing it. Maybe he'll surprise you, but I think he had his chance and blew it when he was leading halfway through the chase last season.
Let's take the 34 and 37 cars together, both of the Ernie Elliott supplied engines, Brad Jenkins, Front Wheel Motorsport, and John Carter, RJ Racing. Kevin LePage in the 34 car, Bill Elliott sharing with Chad Chaffin in the 37.
Really, let's talk about Bill Elliott. I love the fact that he's back. I'm desperate for him to qualify at Daytona. As for the other drivers, they are bit part players, to say the least. They'll qualify for some races. We like Front Row Motorsports because they're one of the good guys, not with a lot of money. We'll see. We'll just have to see.
Jeremy Mayfield, 36 car, 360 OTC sponsored Toyota.
This is very big because Jeremy Mayfield is one of the Toyota drivers now who's actually has chase experience. Jeremy Mayfield probably proved last year that he was a tad sensitive and needs to be mollycoddled a little bit when it comes to the team to get the best out of him. There's more to Jeremy Mayfield and more performance than we saw last year. Whether he can do it within the Toyota, only time will tell.
David Gilliland has kicked off the season well. Can't be Rookie of the Year this year in the 38 Ford, though.
Yeah, you can't really kick off a season any better than being the pole sitter at the Daytona 500. Huge jump forward by the Yates organisation, considering they were in free fall and turmoil last year. He will run well on some of the faster tracks, some of the bigger tracks. Don't see him making the chase. I see it as a learning year for him. He's got another couple of years after that on his contract. Don't forget, this time last year, nobody had even heard of David Gilliland.
Yeah.
So I think he will...
You had, though.
Well, yeah, but that's my job. I believe he'll win a race this season, possibly a couple of races this season, but I really don't see him making the chase. I think he's got a lot to learn.
Next three are all Chip Ganassi runners, the 40, 41 and 42 Dodgers, David Stremme, Reed Sorensen, and Rookie of the Year contender Juan Pablo Montoya, or Juan Pablo Montoya, as they would have had it on the scoring Daytona. David Stremme, first of all.
Well, let's take Stremme and Sorensen together.
Yeah.
Guys who both were in the rookie chase last year. Neither of them performed, I believe, anywhere near the way they should have done. Of the two, I actually see a little bit more coming out of David Stremme this year than Reid Sorensen. I think David Stremme will finish ahead of him, and we'll see mid-season and towards the business end of the season, we'll see a lot more from David Stremme. Let's cut to the chase, though. The excitement here is in the number 42 car, JPM. I honestly believe, and I'm not just saying this because with my European open wheel hat on, if such a thing exists, I think he's going to absolutely blow the doors off people this year. I've been thinking, the more I think about it, and the more I've seen him perform, and the more I've seen how relaxed he is, and how much he's enjoying his racing.
If such a thing doesn't exist, then presumably the NASCAR merchandising people will invent it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Put it this way. Did you look back to when he joined the Formula One circus in 2001, the way he flicked two fingers up at the establishment and at Schumacher by that overtaking manoeuvre in Brazil and almost forcing him off the track. This guy exudes. He has to be in the right place with the right team. He exudes confidence. He will do things that will surprise a lot of people, and he won't get bullied by the people who think he's the newcomer and he's the rookie and he's the foreigner and he's the open wheel guy and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
10 years ago, when Tony Stewart first came across, life was difficult in his first year and he had to take the hits and he had to take Bean into the wall. I think Montoya will not have that harder ride this year. I think that NASCAR want them there, and I think he'll have an easier and therefore a more successful first season. Let's move on to...
He's nailed on for Rookie of the Year, and when we come to it later, I'm going to surprise you by saying he'll be Rookie of the Year. He will also make the chase.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Petty Enterprises.
You disagree with that, though, John, because when we did our prediction show earlier in the year, you said AJ Allmendinger would win Rookie of the Year.
I know, I don't disagree, he'll get the chase, though. Bobby Labonte and Kyle Petty, 43 and 45 in the Petty Enterprises Evernham Powered Dodgers. Kyle Petty, well, who knows? Bobby Labonte.
Let's talk about Bobby Labonte first of all. Bobby Labonte is bringing a little bit of cred and a little bit of performance and a little bit of speed back to the number 43 car, which is, let's face it, is one of the most important cars to older traditionalist NASCAR Cup and NASCAR fans. Towards the end of last year, again, he began to really, really get the most out of the car. And that was a lot of to do with the addition of Paul Andrews, who came in mid-season last year to engineer the car for him. And I think they've kept pretty much the entire team. In fact, all they've done is add a sponsor this year. So they're exactly the same as last year. This guy's a former champion. He could be, again, we haven't ring-fenced many. I think Scott Riggs and Bobby Labonte could be a surprise this season. Bobby Labonte, again, outsider, possibly might even sneak into the chase. As for Kyle Petty, making noises about wanting to continue to race for quite a lot longer. He isn't finished yet. New crew chief this year, although the fact that he's going to be signed up to do a number of races in the commentary box for TNT.
I predict the most excitement we'll get is when he commentates from the car at Sonoma. Dale Jarrett in the Toyota, the 44 UPS Dow Automotive car, two new sponsors to that team, and Dow Automotive, a major associate in NASCAR for the first time.
Well, new team, new engine, new everything. He's got a 2-year contract this year and next year. I think that's probably all. He is the key in many ways to Toyota, because they needed to get a former champion. They needed to get a big name with a huge following, and also with a big sponsor who are keen to activate very heavily. And UPS are massive into the activation of their association with Dale Jarrett. It's huge for Toyota. We saw in the Bud shootout how hard it was and how much he was struggling. Very difficult to know. I see a difficult long year for Michael Waltrip Racing coming up, and a difficult year for Dale Jarrett.
Want to fit in two more before we take the next break. We'll talk about Mike Bliss briefly in a moment. After a team that you've just talked about, they're having a lot of changes. Here's one who stays the same. Lowe's Home Improvement, Jimmy Johnson, the 48 car, Chad Knaus, his team chief.
Without question, the four horse of the last 3 to 4 years. If, when eventually we start referring to it as the chase era, do Jimmy Johnson is the absolute form horse of the chase era. Signed up till 2010. I don't just mean 10 past 8. That'll be a very short contract. He's you know, we've said it already, absolutely no alone to make the chase. He's no alone to have some significant victories this year. He did the unthinkable last year, and he won the Daytona 500. He won the Brickyard 400. Just absolutely phenomenal. I see him winning multiple races this year. I see exactly the same as last year. Steady performances all season. Never being out of the top 10. Always being there at the finish, making the chase, fighting for the title with Casey Kane and Tony Stewart. What more do we need to say?
49, Mike Bliss, you've got 15 seconds. The biggest story I can see about the 49 Dodge team is they don't have a sponsor at the moment.
they're going to struggle this year. These are going to be going home more often than they get into races, and that's as much as we're going to say about the number 49 team.
Globecast Radio. Love cars. Love motorsport. Love music.
The 55 car is a Toyota. It's the Napa-sponsored Michael Waltrip car, striking out on his own decks.
Yes, the car in front will most likely not be a Toyota this season.
PR people love you.
Oh, no, although the scuttle and rumour and nonsense on the internet says they'll do exactly the same as they did in craft and truck racing. They'll sandbag it for the first year, they'll start to win next year, and they'll dominate in year three. So think of them sandbagging this year.
66. Go on, sorry. Very quickly.
As you say, we said it before. It's go or go home. Early in the season, they have no owner points. He's got huge sponsors. This is a massively funded team. But it besides the money that's coming from Toyota, they've got Coca-Cola, they've got Burger King, UPS, Best Western. This is a big project.
Can't afford to go home.
Absolutely not.
66 and 70, Jeff Green and Johnny Sauter in the Gene Haas Automation Chevys.
To be perfectly honest, of those two, Johnny Sauter jumps out at me because he's finally making that move, which is great to see. Finally making the move from the Busch series, where he's been an absolute stalwart and a terrifically... And it's good to see Haas back as well. It's pretty much a new team across the board. Jeff Green. He's in a well-funded team in Haas. Whether we'll see anything starting from him, I really doubt. I'm far more interested in seeing what Johnny Sauter does with this team. Far more interested.
Tim's just said to me that he wants to move on to Brandon Witt next.
Well, Brandon Witt, just to say, Brandon Witt, any of our UK listeners who ever ventured in the early years of days of thunder racing in the UK will have seen this young, as he came over and raced as a teeny weeny embryonic young man, Brandon Witt.
It was NASCAR Formula Fetus, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was NASCAR Fetus South, I think. Yeah. You're
so we're going to see him.
I'd say it was East Midlands, but.
he's going to be a rookie this season. I don't necessarily see him doing anything again. Very much like Dave Reagan and Dave Ruderman. Well, particularly Dave Ruderman, insofar as that haven't got a great stellar pedigree. Although Brandon Witt, the most important thing about Brandon Witt is that you could probably say you can't say about any other member of the Nextel Cup Circus is that he was a student at the Elf Lafleur School in France.
Very good. I think you're probably right. Kenny Wallace in the Furniture Raw Racing Chevy, the 70-year car.
Kenny Wallace, you know what? Very much like last year, one of the stories of Thursday will be whether or not he can get into the field. That's pretty much the sort of thing. That's where we are with a team like that, is that they just want to qualify for some of the big events. So Kenny Wallace will be delighted if he can make it into the field for Furniture Raw Racing. Again, a completely family-run owner sponsor, classically old school, run bizarrely out of Colorado. I'd love to see them make the field, even though I'm not the biggest Kenny Wallace fan. I'd love to see them make the field.
The two Red Bull Toyotas will take together Brian Vickers in the 83 and Rookie of the Year candidate AJ Allmendinger.
Whoa, this is one of those that could go horribly wrong for that team. Mm. Brian Vickers is a young, promising, now race winner. Although, in arguably the best, if not the best, large team in Nextel Cup Racing, he managed one win where he had to push his teammate out of the way to get it and got booed in victory lane. And then they brought in a open wheel star who struggled mightily. AJ's had a desperate time so far this season. He's qualified 40th for the and will have to race his way into the Daytona 500 again because of a team with no owner points.
And I've tipped him for rookie of the year.
Yeah, let's watch. One of the things I'll be watching very closely on Thursday will be how he handles the pressure. And it is really, it's boiler room pressure cooker stuff to qualify. And so that will be one of the most interesting things to watch, will be AJ Allmendinger trying to get into the field on Thursday.
Ricky Rudd, the 88 car.
Great to see Ricky back. Really is. He is injecting the same monkey glands as Mark Martin, because he's clearly decided he can't stay away either. And although he's looking particularly trim and young and right up for it, and he's going to run a lot of races this season, and he's already stuck it on the front row. He and David Gilliland have guaranteed their spots in the on the front row of the 500. It's fantastic to see him back. Whether or not he'll really do anything major this season, difficult to know. But it's just terrific to see some of the marquee names of the past back and racing so well.
And interesting to see the 88 car running with Snickers and Pedigree dog food. The 99 car is where we call next for 20 seconds about Office Depot and Carl Edwards.
Without question, this is it now. He had a lot of bad luck last year. He got involved in other people's accidents at a crucial time when he was just beginning to get form together to make a run for the chase. He got involved in too many accidents. New crew chief this year. Don't think there's any worries about his driving ability, his talent. Roush are a very, very strong team. We should see Carl Edwards winning races. We should see the backflip on more than one occasion this season. I'd like to see him curtail his bush activities, focus a little bit more on the Nextel Cup. He will make the chase.
A couple of others in terms of drivers. Let's have a quick word about Marcus Ambrose, Team Australia Aussie Vineyards, the 47 car possibly.
Delighted to see Marcus Ambrose. You know, arguably this sort of racing shouldn't be a problem for him. He's only doing two races for the moment this season in an additional Wood Brothers car, but arguably you would think that when a man who with so much experience in Aussie V8s knows how to drive one of these big heavy cars, he encouragingly raced very well, in winter testing, was quite quick. He was also improving steadily towards the end of the season in Craftsman Truck, so probably not enough races to give him any sort of opportunity to show what he can do, but maybe something to look out for 2008.
And we've saved the best to last, in my opinion. Boris said in the Sobey No Fear energy drink Ford, the 60 car.
Put it this way, Boris, they're running on a shoestring. There's five of them running the whole team or some such. It's absolutely extraordinary. Granted, they're working next door to the Roush shop. They're getting a lot of help from Roush. But Boris stuck the car sixth in qualifying on the third row of the grid for the 500. That's fantastic. I cannot wait to see him in the Gator 150 on Thursday. I'm salivating thinking about it. I'm just so happy for him. I'd just love to see them do more races. They're doing a handful of probably 6 to 7 races this season. He's just wonderful. He's a breath of fresh air. He's exactly what the series needs. He should get more publicity, and we're trying to get an interview with him next week sometime, I hope.
And finally, Declan, can you give me 10 words about James Hilton?
I'll give you 3 words on James Hilton. Retirement Living TV. That's his sponsor. Retirement Living TV. He's 5,000 years old. His son is his crew chief. He can't race the car for tomorrow. Because there's no guarantee he'll be alive then.
He's racing the car for yesterday. He's 72 years old. Unbelievable.
He's a former Rookie of the Year, though, isn't he?
Oh, the 1912 or something like that.
Before NASCAR was invented. Declan, thank you very much. We'll come back to you for your predictions shortly, but next both Declan and John will be playing a NASCAR related game show here on Midweek Motorsport.
Sky Channel 0157 and 0157.org. Globecast Radio.
Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
This is Midweek Motorsport on Globecast 0157. Well, over the last few months, we've been running a game show every week called Call My Huff. This week, with our NASCAR special, we don't have Call My Huff, but we did need something to replace it. So while I was watching the NASCAR coverage over the weekend, I was thinking of ideas of what we could have instead. And something that caught my eye was the number of TV adverts which use NASCAR drivers. And I think my favourite, and I'm not sure what John and Declan have to say about this, but my favourite had to be Denny Hamlin bump drafting on his lawnmower. You seen that one?
That does make me laugh a lot.
I also like the driver's school where he says, how close do you need to be to the car in front? Oh, just enough to stay in the draft.
Declan, what's your favourite?
My favourite is probably, although they're quite cheesy, I like the Napa Auto Parts school ad.
Okay.
We're spelling parts today, but yes, we're only one letter away from selling parts tomorrow.
Yes, that was quite good as
very
well.
Very good.
anyone got a least favourite one?
Anyone's involving Dale Jr.
I was just about to say the very, very homoerotic Wrangler jean ads that that Dale Jr.'s in at the moment. Lots of shots of men's crotches and playing The Boys Are Back in Town. What does that say?
I'm not actually that happy with the Subway advert. I think that...
that's strange because you like Subway.
I do like Subway.
Which Subway commercial are we talking about? There are several.
The one with Tony Stewart and I think Dale Jarrett.
That's not Dale Jarrett. That's the spokesman for Subway.
Is it?
He was a Dale Jarrett lookalike.
He is, and sound like. Okay, well, I couldn't...
What's the game?
I couldn't think of a game which involved...
Adverts.
But I did read a report in one of the websites saying that doing these adverts isn't just about advertising the product, it's also about advertising the drivers and the drivers getting their personality across.
Yes,
because
it is. That's right.
If people like the drivers, then people will buy the drivers' merchandise. And so drivers' merchandise is the name of the game today, because we're going to be playing Dale of the Century.
And now, from Norwich, it's the Quiz of the Week.
And our two contestants on Dale of the Century today are Declan.
Good evening.
And John.
Hello.
And
Dale of the Century. Very good. You are very good, Tim. Get your finger off your buzzer.
Each of them has a buzzer. This is what Declan's buzzer sounds like. And this is what John's buzzer sounds like. And basically, I have a list of NASCAR-related merchandise here, and right, you have to tell me what you think it retails at.
$12.99.
So all the prices are in dollars and cents.
Okay.
And
do we have to buzz in and do this, or do we each get a go on the closest wins?
You have to buzz in, but if you get it wrong, then your opponent gets a chance to steal the money.
Okay.
So, first of all, what will you offer me for a Casey Kane model car? Declan?
$39.95.
Is the wrong answer. John, would you like to put in an offer?
$25.99.
Okay, Declan was closer on that one, because the actual value on the NASCAR shop is $64.99.
Well, both of you,
Riley.
So
good, that's 12 pence.
We move on to the Jamie McMurray clock. John?
I think the Jamie McMurray clock is $59.99.
Declan?
I think based on his performances this year it should be free, but I'd imagine it's $22.99.
Declan is once again closer with $22.99, because the actual price was $19.99.
Of course he's closer, because he lives in the States. He's used to this money.
Okay. The next item is a David Gilliland ladies pastel ribbed tank top. And John just got there first.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
Do you want to throw in the red flag?
Yes.
I think that is going to be $19.99.
Declan?
$24.99.
John's closer this time, 1699.
Yes. Oh, I nearly said 1699 as well.
Okay. The Reed Sorensen license plate. That was Declan just...
Well, actually, officially, they can't give them away, but $19.99.
John?
Oh, no, $9.99.
Declan, closer, it's $29.99.
Never in the world.
Yes.
Who wants one of them? Even Reed Sorensen doesn't want one of them.
Some of these items are pretty obscure, I have to say. The Jimmy Johnson jacket.
That was Dex.
By a long way, yes.
Yes.
$89.95.
John?
$120.
John is closer on that one because it's $104.99.
Oh. Just closer.
Only just closer by 1 cent. a dollar and 1 cent, actually. The Casey Mears sunglasses. What will your feet be? John?
The Kissimmee sunglasses are $29.99.
Declan?
$110.
John, once again closer. They're only $9.97.
Oh, they must be rubbish.
They must be rubbish.
They should be Dave Blaney or Kevin LePage sunglasses for $9.99.
I think we need... Dex, I don't know about you, but I'd like more of a product description, wouldn't you?
I think so, yes.
They are...
not now. Before we have to guess. You're a rubbish quiz master.
Okay, next. And the items do get more bizarre from here on.
Okay.
With the... Oh, hang on. Let me cross out Jimmy Johnson jackets. We've done that one. The Kevin Harvick shower curtain. Declan.
Purely because I actually buzzed in at Kevin Harvick there. $14.99.
John?
Now, do I go higher or lower than $14.99 for it? Do we have any clues about what it's made from?
It's made from some kind of waterproof artificial fibre.
$19.99.
Declan's close, it's only $12.97.
I nearly went lower. Goodness.
Staying with Kevin Harvick, because he is the master of bizarre, the Kevin Harvick pet set, which consists of a lead and collar. Declan's already buzzed.
I buzzed in at Kevin Harvick again. I'm going to go for $37.99.
John?
Oh, no, I think it's going to be cheaper than that. I think it's $29.99.
John's closer. It's $24.97.
Oh. Plus tax, of course. That would have took it up to $29.99. I'd get extra points for that.
I was in Canadian dollars on that one.
Back to Jamie McMurray and the Jamie McMurray bar...
I think you should... No, don't tell him now. You can't tell him. He's buzzed in.
Yeah, I'm going to guess.
He's got to guess what it is.
$64.99.
John, it's actually a Jamie McMurray bar stool.
Right.
What do you think it is?
$99.99.
John's closer. It's actually
$109.99.
Oh! For a bar stool. For a bar stool,
yes. Yes, but it's quicker than his race car. Dex, it's quicker than his race car and more aerodynamic.
It's more aerodynamic than the car of tomorrow.
Next, something which has aerodynamics all of its own and one moving part. It's the Dale Jarrett door knocker. John was just about fast.
I don't believe for 1 minute he was first.
Yes, he was.
You were on a delay, don't forget.
You're both on a delay.
I think that is $7.99.
Chance to steal here, Declan.
$34.99.
Is closer because it's $39.97.
Oh.
I think you're...
I know my knockers.
You're significantly undervaluing Dale Jarrett's knockers there, John.
Dale Jarrett has his knockers, but I don't
There
think
are plenty of Dale Jarrett knockers, in fairness.
Okay, you're currently 5 each. We've got 3 to go, so will definitely be a winner, but who will it be? We move on to the Kyle Busch 4-piece barbecue set. Declan was a long way ahead there.
He was.
I got in a Kyle Busch 4-piece. I thought it was the band that he's just formed. But, I'm going for a barbecue set. Ooh, we're probably looking around the, if it's good quality, having got one as a wedding gift recently, around the $39.99 mark.
John?
When we say barbecue set, we're not talking about a barbecue, we're talking about the tools to go with it.
Or even the grill cover. It's just the fork and the tongs and that sort of thing, and the slice.
What did you say, Dex?
$39.99.
I think it's
made of real metal.
I think it's $49.99.
Declan is close, saying it's only $26.99 at the moment.
Gosh darn.
Just like your brother there.
Staying with all things manly and rugged, the Mark Martin leather tool belt.
Sorry, I was giggling too much to push me buzzer to fire me Wookiee off.
Declan.
I was giggling at the Mark Martin leather tool, but that's another issue. Mark Martin leather tool belt, oh, I'd imagine that's probably around the $69.99 mark.
John? Would you pay $70 nearly for a Mark Martin leather tool belt?
Well, it depends what quality is. I'm going to say $59.99.
John is closer,
we've got to the decider!
You're both way out because it's $24.97.
Oh, it doesn't contain any tools, then. It must be just
a belt. It doesn't contain any tools. No, it's just a belt.
I think that's a bargain. Thinking it had some tools in it.
You should have asked if you were unsure.
You see, it would have had craftsman tools, which are the official tools of NASCAR, of course.
So, finally, the tiebreaker is the Ricky Rudd baby booties. Well, Declan was a long way ahead there. How much would you pay for some Ricky Rudd baby booties?
$9.99.
John?
I was going to say $9.99. He's stolen. What am I going to say? Oh, he's not right, then, I take it.
He's not right,
money.
No.
$7.99.
And John, you're the winner because that is a lot closer, although it's not the correct answer either. The correct value, the figure at which the Ricky Rudd baby booties are currently selling on NASCAR.com's online shop is 97 cents.
That's a bargain.
I should stock up, really.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Maybe we actually made them out of Ricky Rudd.
The use bits of his hair, basically, that they've collected from inside his racing helmet.
Sorry, can we go back to the real, more serious
what do I win?
Now,
do I win a set of Ricky Rudd baby booties?
No.
Mark Martin tool belt?
No. You win this empty plastic bottle, which I have here.
Thanks.
And that is Dale of the Century.
We know that when you listen to Globecast Radio via Sky, you need to be near your telly. Thousands of you do every week. But we know we're missing a trick. People that want to listen to us anywhere in the house, well, now you can. Thanks to the Sky Gnome. No, not a little red and green man with a silly pointy hat holding a fishing rod, but a rather natty little box in sophisticated blue or funky orange that's a portable wireless way of listening to Sky channels, all Sky channels, around the house. Although we, of course, know you'll only ever have it tuned to Globecast Radio. So now you can be in the dining room, the kitchen, the bathroom, the bedroom, garden, or the garage. Up to 30 metres away to use the remote, more if you just want to listen. Go to sky.com for full details of the Sky Gnome. Sound anywhere at home. Buy a gnome.
It's the NASCAR Nextel Cup preview here on Sky Channel 0157, Clubcast Radio and Midweek Motorsport. So having gone through the major runners and riders, then Declan and Tim, all that remains is for us to put our mortgages on the line and pick some people to get into the chase. 12, remember, we have to have this year, and also your Rookie of the Year candidates. Are we going to do this turn and turn about, or are we going to come up with a committee, or are we just going to fire off 12 names each?
Let's just fire off 12 names each.
Yes, absolutely. Who's going to start, then?
I think you should, because you know the most.
Right, I'm going to go through, and I only checked this afterwards, and I discovered that I picked 12 of the bookies top 17.
Really?
So yeah, so I'm out of kilter with the Las Vegas odds makers to the tune of five people. So let me go through them vaguely in the order of where they'll finish in the championship. But that's sort of where basically these are the 12 names I believe will make the chase. Jimmy Johnson, Tony Stewart.
Hang on, Jimmy Johnson. Yep.
Tony Stewart.
Mhm.
Casey Kane.
Yep.
Matt Kenseth.
Yep.
Kurt Busch.
Yep.
Kevin Harvick.
Yep.
Kyle Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Biffle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where I get a bit odd. Elliot Sadler.
Ooh.
Okay.
Jeff Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
That's all odd, obviously. Denny Hamlin.
Mm-hmm.
And who's number 12? Is it Dale Earnhardt Jr.? Is it Ryan Newman? Is it J.J. Yeley?
No, you're going
Jeff
to pick
Gordon?
Montoya, aren't you?
It's Juan Pablo Montoya.
Very good.
And your Rookie of the Year?
Juan Pablo Montoya.
Okay. So now we need to choose John's list.
Oh, why do I have to go next?
Because you're the second column that I've drawn.
Well, that, you could draw another column and it not be me.
I could do, but I won't. I've
it
only
could be
got
you.
A limited amount of paper here.
Okay. Right. Okay. I'm not going to disagree with Declan in that I think Jimmy Johnson will be right up there at the top.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we'll also have, and other than that, really, no major order. But I think Robbie Gordon will make the chase.
Controversial.
Yeah, I think he will.
That's a bit mad, but carry on.
No, I've listen, mate. I just think that Ford needs a golden boy, and he will be the golden boy. Denny Hamlin,
mm-hmm.
in his sophomore year. Matt Kenseth,
mm-hmm.
Tony Stewart,
mm-hmm.
Kevin Harvick,
yep.
Now, who else? Jeff Burton.
Ooh, yeah. Interesting.
How many is that?
That's seven.
I'm going to put Montoya in there.
Mm-hmm.
And... I'm going to put Allmendinger in there.
Okay.
How many is that?
That's nine.
Three more. I'm going to put J.J. Yeley in there.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And did I say Greg Biffle already?
No.
Right, Greg Biffle.
Okay.
And I've got one more, haven't I?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to put Junior in there.
Well, you did pick him to win the title.
I know, but that was just a bit of nonsense, that, really.
And your Rookie is going to be Allmendinger, yes?
I don't think it's going to be Allmendinger now, because I think, I said when he first went, I thought it was a big, big mistake for him to go, and I was supporting him because of his sports car links. And I'm going to say, I will stick with him, but I think that it's the year that NASCAR need a foreign driver to do something, and I also think that the South American thing is just too big. And after I saw how much fuss they made about him at the Rolex 24, I think Dex is right, and I think that the JPM will win it at a canter, to be honest. And I think he'll be a factor right throughout the season. But I'm still going to go for Allmendinger because you've said I have to.
Yes. I'm going to pick Montoya because I already picked him as my Rookie. So he goes in my Rookie space. So my 12, and these are in no particular order.
Okay.
We're going to have Kevin Harvick, Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Mm-hmm. Big name so far, nothing controversial there.
Nothing controversial to start with.
No.
Ryan Newman.
Mm. Very interesting call.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And another one about to appear, Reed Sorensen. Jimmy Johnson.
Yes.
I am going to go... How many have I got? I need six more.
Sometime this century.
I'm doing it faster than you did.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't have it written down.
Kurt Busch and Kyle Busch.
Oh, okay.
Mark Martin.
Mark Martin? I nearly said Mark Martin.
Because obviously, although he's retired...
And he's only doing 22 races.
And he's only doing 22 races, apparently, at the moment. He's shown that that's not...
Oh, he's going to retire properly and do the rest of the season there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Correct.
How many you got left?
I've got three more to choose.
I just want to make a point when you've done this. Very, very quickly. Go on.
I will go for Jeff Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I haven't chosen Casey Kane yet, have I?
No, Casey Kahane. You've got to pronounce that correctly. It's an embarrassment when you get it wrong on the radio.
And one more.
You haven't mentioned Denny Hamlin yet, have you?
I don't want to put Denny Hamlin in my top 12, that's why.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Sterling Marlin?
No, I think Greg there's Biffle? Probably... Shall I have Jamie McMurray?
I'd be brave.
It's up to you. I wouldn't have
you
Jamie McMurray.
You can't ask us.
I'm just thinking aloud here. Let's go.
It makes great for great radio, by the way, you thinking
aloud. It
does. Aloud,
fantastic.
Better than me thinking silently, I'm sure.
Yes, that is true, in fairness.
Let's go then for...
That's him thinking Biffle. Silently, you see, it doesn't work. Right. Can I just make the point? How many Toyota drivers are there in those that we've just picked?
None.
Yes. Well, absolutely. Isn't that interesting?
That's not true, because you've picked AJ Allmendinger.
Yes, okay. But... And looking back on that, is that not a mistake?
No, not remotely. It's going to be tough. We actually haven't really, as part of a preview, because we obviously decided to go through the drivers as opposed to do sort of an overall overarching view of the whole thing. But we've said it before. I think they're going to struggle. It's just going to be too difficult in year one, and they don't have a stellar lineup. They don't have that key team like a Penske or a Hendrick or a Roush. I think they'll struggle a little bit. It's going to come good. It'll come good later in the season, and it'll certainly come good next season.
It'll be too late by then.
Yeah, this year it's going to be a tough year for them.
So no Michael Waltrip, no Dale Jarrett in the chase. No David Reutemann.
Don't think so. No.
Okay. That was just something that struck me as you guys were going through it, and I was going through it as well, and I hadn't consciously thought of that. I was looking at drivers rather than teams, and it was just struck me. Very interesting. Anything else you need from us, Tim?
Nothing else in terms of predictions.
So that must mean that's the end of the show then.
Indeed it does.
And that was our NASCAR Nextel Cup preview on Midweek Motorsport. Plenty more of our special shows to come in the next few weeks, including our Formula One preview. We'll also be doing an ALMS preview on the 28th of this month. Which comes from a very special venue,
yes,
more of which
somewhere
later.
Somewhere where they're building cars, but we can't tell you any more at this moment,
building
even
cars.
Even this summer night?
Probably.
Our Formula One preview, bear in mind, will not be on a Wednesday, and we'll tell you why when we get nearer the time.
It's about the dogs.
It's a NASCAR preview, though, insofar as that Toyota won't win anything in that either.
Well, I think you're absolutely right in that, mate. Absolutely right. Next week's show then, Tim. On a packed show next week, we'll have
Liz Halliday.
Ah, fantastic. Announcement about her racing career continuing in sports cars, and we'll hear all about that next week. Let's have your emails, please, to studio@0157.org. Do you agree or disagree with our picks for the championship? And what else should we be talking about on Midweek Motorsport every Wednesday night, live from London and other places, or here on 0157. From Tim Gray, from Declan Brennan, and myself, John Hindhoff, that was Midweek Motorsport. Bye for now. We'll
it on the road or on the track. It's on Globecast Radio. Music and cars. What a combination.